Parshas Balak, Parakhov Dalid, Pasuk Yud Dalid. It says, V'atayinini holech lami, this is Bilam at the very, very end. Now I'm going to go back to my nation. L'cha i'atzcha. Come, I am going to advise you, asher yasa omazel l'amcha b'achos yamin, what my nation, what this nation is going to do to your nation in the end of days. So what's going on here? Now, we all know the basics, but let's go into some of the other things that people don't know about. Rashi says in the words, I know, holech lami, that Bilam is lamenting his own loss, that he knew this was it. He was no longer going to get any nevuos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Until this time, it's possible that he was a bit of a Navi. We don't know. That we absolutely don't know. It could be that this is the first time that he ever received a nevuah in the first place. He didn't even see what the donkey was seeing. But there's no question after this, all the charlatan issues that he had gone through up until now, all the crazy things that he had done, it's all over. Everything's completely over. He is never going to get a nevuah again. Obviously, it's going to start happening after this nevuah. Hinni holech lami means after this is over, I'm going to my nation, and I'm going to be with them, and I'm going to be a normal person from this point on. Nothing is going to be the same. That's the idea behind it. Yosef Hillel says there's a couple gears sos of Rashi here. Not important, but it might be stalic in the future itself. The Chassam Sofer says something a little bit different. Holech le'ami sounds like when someone's going to die. They're going like ne'asaf elamecha, that you get gathered up into your nation. That refers to a person dying. So it's possible that Bilam knew that this suggestion of what he was going to do to destroy Klal Yisrael was a bit of mesiras nefesh on his part. It was giving up a bit of his life. The idea was going to be that not only was this going to be his last nevuah, this was going to be his last days on earth. Bilam knew that as soon as he said this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to take it against him and immediately kill him for it. Now, that didn't happen. At the end of the day, Bilam died by the hands of the Jews in the war against Midian, which was a little bit later. We don't know how much later. We don't know how much of a time period was in between Bilam and Balak trying to curse the nation up until they ended up, you know, until he ended up dying. We have no idea. But it was at least a couple months. He knew this is the end of his life. And he was still willing to be Moser Nefesh for it. Even though he knew he was going to be punished for it, I'm still willing to do this. That's what he says over here. That's the Chassam Sofer over here. The Shach says it was a response to what Balak said. Balak says you have to run away. Brach lecha. Run away to wherever you think you should go, because the Jews are going to come after you. They're going to start chasing after you. They're going to do all these terrible things to you. To which he said back, I have nothing to worry about. There is literally nothing for me to worry about. I'm going to go home calmly. I've been waiting for this moment. I've been preparing for this. I'm a magician. And I have all these things ready. And I have knowledge of all this kishuv that will never allow me to die. Sinni holich. Allow me. I'm not running away anywhere. I am walking back to my nation slowly because I know I am going to be okay. That's the idea. And of course, we know Bilam's magics didn't help him in the end. Either Pinchas or Tzili ben Dan ended up killing him. But he thought he was going to be fine. He didn't have to worry about it. So those are three pshatim on the words in Holech Lami. He was going to lose his nevuah. He was going to lose his life. Or he said, I'm going to walk. I'm not going to run away at all. That's the idea behind it. Now, what was the nevuah? Rashi says there were two different parts to it that are connected. One was advice, how to destroy them for now in order to get rid of them right now, which we'll talk about soon. And the other was telling them that the Jews were going to destroy your nation at the end of days, that Moab and Ammon and Midian were all going to be destroyed at the end of days. At the end of whatever is going to be, that's what's going to happen. Now, the Rashbam and the Sforna both explained it. It's true, Bilam said to Balak. It's 100% true that in the end, they're going to destroy your nation. But it's going to be so many years and years from now. You don't have to worry about that now. This is something they have to worry about so many years in the future over here. Which means you can do something right now and you have nothing to worry about. Anything you do to them right now will only help you. And who cares about what's going to be in the future? Your great-great-grandchildren will die. But you are going to survive. Let me give you an idea that will help you survive even longer and make you feel good and destroy a bunch of Jews in the process. The Ramban says this was not a straight-out nevuah prophecy that he said in front of everyone. He pulled them to the side. The wording is, lecha i'atzcha, I'm going to advise you. Bilam didn't want anyone to know about this, and he purposely took him to the side, said nobody else would know the plans, that nobody could warn the Jews about it beforehand. After all, the Jews didn't know about any of this at the time. It could be the Jews never knew about this until Moshe Rabbeinu himself told it to them at the end of 40 years. At the end of 40 years, he pulls out the Torah and brings them Parshas Balak, and only then did they find out about the whole cursing business. They obviously killed Bilam in the war, but they may not have known the connection between the two. This is the idea of what it's trying to say. He pulls them to the side, and it makes it even more amazing that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to tell them everything later on, telling them, here's the story behind the story behind this story, why Bilam was with the five kings of Midian when we destroyed the Midianites later on. The Malbim says the exact same thing. It had to be private. He wanted them to take this advice and to do it well. And Bilam had a fear of heaven. He was surprised at himself, but he was worried saying it out loud might be something bad. He wanted to say it privately to Balak, said literally only Balak could hear and nothing else. Now, what was the advice? I think we all know it from Rashi and what happens later on. Illicit behavior. He said there's one big weakness of the Jews, and it's znus. They love to be involved in different types of illicit behaviors. In fact, when we said earlier that they were complaining in Parshas Baloscha, according to Rashi, they were complaining bocha al mishpachosav. They were crying about their families, crying about who they could and they couldn't marry. Why are we being limited in who we can and who we can't marry? You can't give us this idea. They said, you have to tell us, you have to be allowed. So said Bilam, in that sense, znus is their biggest weakness. If you cause them to fail in this test, if this is what they fail in, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu will allow you to defeat them. And Parshas Matos, it's in Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Tazayin. It says Moshe Rabbeinu was upset at the woman that they had kept alive in the war. And they said, Hein, Hein, Ahayu Levnei Yisrael, Bidvar Bilam. These were the women that were suggested by Bilam to be together with Bnei Yisrael, and you allowed them to live. The awful advice that Bilam suggested to take these women to cause them to have znus with Klal Yisrael was given here. E'atzcha, I am going to give you the advice of what to do. Says Rashi, here's where he did it. Rav Hirsch talks about this as well. So what did they do? What was the process? Targum Yonasan says a bit of a different version than you may have heard. Targum Yonasan Nuziel says, Bilam said, let's set up marketplaces. These marketplaces are going to be with women of ill repute that are selling something that the Jews will all want to buy, like food or drink or different tchotchkes that they need where they are. There will be normal kiosks that sell at a normal price, but these women, the beautiful women that they're going to set up specifically for this, they're going to sell their wares for much cheaper and at a much lower price to make sure that the Jews will go inside their shop. The men will taste the food, they'll drink the really strong drink, and it'll get them drunk, less inhibited, and they'll desire the beautiful women who own these shops, and they'll want to be together with all these women who own these shops. These women should make sure to force the Jewish men to deny their bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, start worshipping the idols that they had with them, cause allegiance with them, and that will allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu to get angry with them. That was the idea. That's the shortened version. But there is another version that's brought down where Rashi adds a little bit, and I'm using the Medrash Rabbah as well. Older women stood in the streets of the marketplace and called out high prices and were very mean to the Jewish men as they went along, calling them names and saying they were cheap Jews or whatever it was that old women would call out names to Jews in the middle of the marketplace. Younger, prettier women would come out from beneath their tents, grab the Jewish men and pull them into the tents and say, "We love you. Why don't you love us? We want to give you this stuff for free. Or even cheaper, right? Really, really," and offering them strong amoni wine to drink, as well as a lot of meat that would be around there. As soon as the men felt comfortable being in that area, the women would give them more and more things, plow them with food, etc., with apply them with food, and with everything they wanted over here, until finally they took out their Baal Peor idols, and they ordered these Jews that if they want to eat from the meat, and if they want to do this and that and the other, you have to bring this meat over to Avodah Zarah. You have to bring it over to Avodah Zarah itself. They looked at the Avodah Zarah. They saw the Avodah Zarah was Baal Peor. Baal Peor was an Avodah Zarah that you go to the bathroom on. And they took a look at it and said, well, we can do that. They took a ton of meat, they drank a ton of wine, and went to the bathroom on top of the idols, worshipping the idols for that service that's done by Baal Peor itself, which obviously was a problem. They fell for it, were together with those women. So why doesn't the Pasuk tell us what they suggested directly? Why does it only hint to it, to the word Yatzcha? If this is all here, then why not say, I'm going to advise you, grab women and have them seduce the Jews? Why does it have to be written in that way? The Shach says, We don't want anyone going around bragging about what they did to the Jews, that they were the reasons why certain Jews died. And aside from that, even if they wouldn't go around bragging about it, if they knew how it worked the first time, this would be used again and again and again for the Jewish nation. We can't allow this to happen again and again and again. For one time, for it to happen, okay, that's one thing. But we didn't write it down specifically, write it down straight out in the Torah, because we don't want other nations taking this advice and doing that to us again and again and again. If that's our weakness, that's a problem. We don't want people to know about it. Mati.
You said the point was that he took something aside and said it privately, so he didn't want everyone to know about it. But to get enough women involved in this plot for 600,000 Jews, surely
obviously you'd have to tell people, right? If you're trying to do it privately, then how in the world? We're going back to the Ramban that says it had to be done privately. At some point, obviously, they had to come out and tell everybody. They didn't want the Jews to get wind of it before it was ready to happen. So they waited and waited, but eventually they were able to do it in such a fashion, maybe in a smart way, where people found out about it, but the Jews would never hear about it. It's a great question, though. That is a really good question. The Shach says that. The Ma'aril and the Tosefes Bracha bring other things over here, but that's not for us right now. The Ibn Ezra doesn't like this as much. He gives another shot over here. He says, let me tell you what's going to happen in the future so that you can get out of it. He goes into that. The Das HaKain says the warning for Bilam, not for Balak, not to get involved with the Jews at all. Stay away from them. Don't go anywhere near them. If you do, you're going to die. And that is what happened. Balak does die in the war against Midian. He told him that he should stay away. But the Chassam Sofer asks the greatest question. He says, wait, I don't understand. Why did he try cursing them in the first place? If this was so successful, and he knew this is going to work, and he said, Yitzchak, I want to tell you a bit of advice that's for sure going to work, then why, when Balak came to him in the first place, and Balak said, I want you to curse out the nation, right? And he said, I can't do it. I can only do what God tells me to do. And then he convinces, so to speak, God to go and curse out the Jews. And it turns out to be three brachos. Why didn't he start off by saying, wait, you don't need to curse them. I've got an idea. I've got a really good bit of advice. Let's go get the girls involved. Why not say that? What was he waiting for? Till the very, very end, and he saw that he couldn't curse them three times, and then all of a sudden he's like, I've got a great idea. Where did that come from? The Chassam Sofer asked that question. It's a brilliant question. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu always hates znus, then immediately do znus. That's what you want to do. It's got to be that Bilam thought that B'nai Yisrael, now remember, this is B'nai Yisrael after 40 years in the Midbar. B'nai Yisrael, who were either witnesses to Matan Torah or second generation from Matan Torah, who saw Kriyas Yamsuf or knew about Kriyas Yamsuf, who saw crazy miracles in the Midbar with the Mun and the Be'er and the Anani HaKavod, who saw their enemies fall down to their feet without doing anything at all. And they had Moshe Rabbeinu with them. Moshe Rabbeinu was with them constantly. Bilam thought there is no chance these people are going to get involved in Znus. And think about it. Why would you think these people would be involved in Znus? They're God's chosen nation. The one thing that they were so well known for when they came out of Mitzrayim is that there were no instances of Znus in Mitzrayim. That no person had been together except for Shlomis Bas Divri, which was a trick, etc. That's something that we're known for. Why in the world would we have fallen for Znus? If Bilam would have suggested that in the first place, if he would have gotten up and said, Balak, let's have a Znus party. That's what we should do because that's what B'nai Yisrael is going to fail in. Balak is going to laugh at him. Are you kidding me? These people, they're not interested in that stuff. Bochel Mishpachos, and maybe they were crying about not being able to marry their sisters because that's what they're used to, and their aunts and things like that. That might be what their family tree was like and what they used to do, but they're not going to be together with Midianite women. They would have said that's crazy. Why would you have thought it? But then he gave a bracha. Says the Chassam Sofer, in his bracha, he realized, oh my gosh, I can get them with snus. Now why? There's an unreal Gemara in Tainis Daf Chaf. Maybe you've heard it before. It's an unbelievable Gemara. The Gemara says in Tainis Daf Chaf that the bracha of Bilam is worse than the curse of Achia HaShiloni. Achia HaShiloni, the Rebbe of Eliyahu HaNavi, Achia Shiloni, the tremendous, tremendous Navi of Klal Yisrael, who's the one that prophesied that Yeravam ben Nevat was going to take over his side of the kingdom, the Malchus Yisrael. He said his curse, Achia Shiloni's curse, was greater than the Bracha Bilam. Why? Achia Shiloni cursed us that we were like reeds. Reeds stand firmly in place, but blow along with the wind. The wind comes this way, immediately they go that way. The wind comes that way, it goes that way. Wherever the wind goes, the reed goes along with it. That's a curse. Because it's saying, B'nai Yisrael, you go with the times. You fly around. Whenever something's happening, you always want to be there. But they're firmly rooted in place. Every wind in the world could come and blow at a reed. The reed does not pick itself up or uproot itself from the ground. It's firmly rooted in place. The Jew, says Achia Shiloni, no matter how far off he goes, nonetheless, he's still here. He's still connected somehow. That was the curse of Achia Shiloni. The bracha of Bilam is that we were like arazim, cedar woods, huge cedar woods. Bilam is looking at us and seeing us as these cedar woods that can't be blown away by the wind at all. And he blesses us. He says, what a bracha. You guys are like cedar woods, but there's something behind the cedar woods, says the Gemara. Cedar woods, most winds can't move it at all. And nothing can happen. The trunk remains in place. But if this huge northern wind comes in, if the northern wind comes in and blows against the tree, it uproots the tree from the ground and throws it away completely. Bilam saw from his own bracha that God had put inside his mouth that within the bracha there's a curse. Within the bracha of saying that you're like cedar wood, there's an ability to uproot them completely and knock them down. Bilam turned to Balak and said, I know I blessed them. I know I blessed them three times, but I just blessed them like a rosin. The amazing thing is, if I bless them like a rosin, that means we now have a way of knocking them down. We just got to find it. There's something that they're fallible in, something that's going to knock them down. We just have to find what that is. And because of that, because after the bracha, after what had ended up happening, he realized there's something there. He said, if a cedar wood is awesome, is that great, if they're that great at tzaddikim, that means their yetzer hara is just as strong. Yes, they're strong cedars, they're strong trees, but the yetzer hara is great as well. And if the yetzer hara is that great, like the Gemara in Sukkot and Beis says, it's possible that we'll be able to knock them down through Arayas itself. That's how he knew, says the Chasam Sofer, that something was going to get them. The curses didn't work. He thought it was going to work, it didn't work. But this, there's something else we can do here. I think we can do this. The Shach asked the same question, Shach HaLaTorah, 300 years before the Chasam Sofer came along. And he said, the Midyanim and the Moavim would never have listened to him in the first place. Think about this for a second. I just want you to think about this. Take your daughters and tell them all to go seduce the Jews, so that eventually they do averos and God will kill them? Think about that for a second. You're sacrificing your daughters. You're taking all the most beautiful girls of your nation and you're sending them to your enemies. You're sending them to your enemies and saying to them, be together with them, marry them, and God will strike them down for it. That is a crazy plan. Can you imagine anyone doing that? It's one thing to say to your daughters, all right, girls, go get these guys, take knives with you, and stab them to death in their sleep. That's one thing. But that's not what they're saying. They're telling their girls, don't do that. Stay away from the Jews. If you try fighting them physically, they'll defeat you. Instead, be together with them, marry into their families, go join the Jewish nation, and then God will strike them down. That's a crazy plan. A crazy plan. The only time somebody would agree to do that is if they're so desperate, there's literally no other choice. When Balak saw that his nation was going to be destroyed, that the curses did not work and they were getting brachos instead, they had no choice but to send in their daughters on a suicide mission. They had no choice. There's literally nothing else left. We're going to die anyway. What difference does it make? Maybe we'll survive through the Jews by marrying into the Jewish family. Maybe that's what we're going to be able to get out of it. Says the Shach, that's the reason why he delayed and delayed and delayed giving this idea, because there was no way it was going to work in normal situations. And then comes Rav Wolfson. If anybody's seen Emunas Yitecha, this is a famous idea from Rav Wolfson. He says it over in a bunch of different ways in a bunch of different parshas. But this is the idea that he says in this week's parsha, and it's an amazing idea. He says the following. It's not the first time that Bilam has ever given advice. We've seen Bilam before give advice. Anybody remember what he did to give advice beforehand? Yeah? By Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, before Moshe Rabbeinu, there were three chief advisors to Paro, right? Bilam, Eov, and Yisro. Yisro suggests don't do anything to the kids. Just let the Jews be. Bilam suggests kill them all. And Eov is quiet. And Bilam is punished. And that punishment is to die eventually. Now, we don't know if it's the same Bilam, because obviously it's many hundreds of years apart. It's more likely that it's a Gilgal of some sort, or we're dealing with somebody that the idea of what Bilam represents or whatever it is. But the concept is that Bilam is an advisor. He's a chief advisor to Paro, and he's an advisor over here. By the way, as a side note, there is a medrash that says that when Bilam, Eov, and Yisro were advisors, they were not advisors to Paro. They were advisors to Balak. They were all advisors to Balak, and they never lived by Paro, and they were never in Egypt. That never happened. It was all now, and they were advising Balak what to do at this moment. You ever hear that before? It's a crazy medrash, but it doesn't mention them at all within Mitzrayim itself. Either way, what happened over here? Clearly, not only that, not only was Bilam willing to advise, what did he advise Paro to do? Take babies and throw them in a river. There is nothing more evil than that. I want you to think for a second. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to think really hard. Can you think of something more evil than drowning babies? Well, we're not talking about killing people is evil in and of itself, but drowning innocent babies, taking the babies from the mothers and drowning them in rivers. There's nothing more evil than such an idea. So the question, says Rav Olson, is why did he hold back over here if he's just this evil? Why would you hold back anything and hold everything back until the very end? We have a great answer from the Chassam Sofer, great answer from the Shach, but they wouldn't have listened. Rav Wolfson says, it's not that they wouldn't have listened. It's that there's a difference that happened by Bilam that did not happen before. Now, here's the deal. You have two midos that are constantly arguing with you all the time. You have midas ha-chesed, your right-hand side, and you have midas ha-din, your strict judgment that goes on your left-hand side. Now, you have that constant battle, and they always quote it as the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. There is no real Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. There's no, you know, little devil that's sitting there with a little tail and a trident, you know, with, like, little horns on top of his head that's standing on your left-hand shoulder, and a guy with, like, innocent little, you know, halo around his neck, and, like, around his neck. Now, that would be, that would choke him to death. But on top of his head, and white robes and whatever sitting in your right-hand side. That's not what you have. You have an aspect of chesed within you and an aspect of din within you. Now, both have positives and negatives. For example, chesed obviously is a positive, that you're always good to other people, you're kind, and you're very, very welcoming, and whatever, you're filled with love. The problem with chesed, as we talked about before, those who remember from Parshas Kedoshim, talking about how chesed, being together with one sister, can be considered a chesed in a certain way, is that if you take chesed too far, if you take ahava too far, love a little bit too far, it becomes grossly disgusting. It becomes arias. If you love people, then you love even the wrong people. And that can go in the wrong direction very, very quickly. Din, on the other hand, is filled with ash, filled with fire. On the one hand, that's a good thing. It is a good thing because it stops you from doing certain things. It holds you back from doing the wrong things. You won't get involved with arias because you're a midas ha-din man. You say, no, that's not right. That's not like me. I'm not going to do such a thing. That's what midas ha-din and ash does. But on the other hand, there's another aspect to din. And the other aspect to din is that there's a lot of hatred going on. There's evil involved in what you do. And sometimes you're meaner to people than you mean to be. You don't want to be mean, it just comes out because that midas ha-din rules over you and that's what ends up happening. It gets you really angry really, really quickly. You know what the greatest gift God has given us is? The midah of anger. Now, I know you look at it and you're like, well, wait, but anger is such a horrible midah. Mesillas Yesharim talks about anger in three different places and he talks about how evil it is. There's pages and pages in Orach HaTzaddikim about the midah of anger. The Ramban in his letter in the Igaris goes on about the midah of anger. The worst midah is anger. What is anger good for? The answer is, anger is good to destroy your Yetzer Hara. If your Yetzer Hara is like, oh, go do that Avera. And you're just like, no, sir, I won't do it this time. You're going to give in every single time. That's not how your Yetzer Hara works. Your Yetzer Hara is going to be able to get you. You have to be angry at Yetzer Hara. You have to knock him in the face. You have to literally blunt his teeth. Haki Eshinov. Destroy the Yetzer Hara. And say, I don't want you in me. I want to get rid of you completely. And anger is put in this world so you can get angry at yourself and you won't do things that are wrong. That's why you need anger. You need anger. It needs to be in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry for a second every single day. And I did the cheshbon once. I think it comes out to 0.08 of a second. I'd like you to take on your cell phone or your stopwatch and try pressing really quickly and see how far you can go. 0.08 is almost impossible to get to. It's not impossible. You could be really, really good and really, really quick, and maybe you can get to it, but it's about 0.08 of a second for you to be able to get. That's the anger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it happens sometime in the morning. Sometime in the morning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry. What does that mean? For 0.08 of a second, all of a sudden HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just like, and that's it? And like there's anger in the world and all of a sudden it's all there? No, obviously not. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows there to be anger in the world, and it's necessary to have that anger so you can knock down your Yetzer Hara, throw out Arias, and you'll have no problems whatsoever. Does everybody hear that so far? We've got two major, major issues over here. Anger is necessary, yes. How would they have been? Kadosh Baruch Hu said in the Gemara and Sota, right, had I not gotten angry in those three times when Bilam tried cursing you, right, I would have destroyed you. Meaning, three times in a row, three mornings in a row, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not get angry. He didn't allow anger to come into the world. Now guys, why is anger good again? Because what does anger do for you? It helps you knock down your Yetzer Hara. So that means you're not going to give in to Arias. Well, if God took anger out of the world, if he took anger out in the world, and there's no anger for 3 days straight, what does that mean? What rules? The Yetzer Hara is going to rule. Arias is going to rule. When Bilam saw that he tried cursing Klal Yisrael three times, at the time when God gets angry, and all three times, did God get angry? No, he took away anger from the world. Send Bilam the bullock. I've got it. If there's no anger in the world, that means they're susceptible to Arias. Up until this point, there's been anger in the world, which means they haven't allowed their Yitzhar to rule over them. Arias has not been rampant. They've been able to control themselves because they have anger. But there's no anger now. If there's no anger, what could happen? Arias. So he turned to Balak and he said, get the girls now. Get the girls now. This is the time to do it. Before anyone else comes in and gets God angry, so to speak, before there's any other anger allowed in the world, do it now. B'nai Yisrael had been so careful up until this point because they used the anger of Hashem wisely. They allowed themselves to be controlled and they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't get involved in Arias. Now that it was gone, they were susceptible. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to them in a way. It's almost like there's a famous Baal Shem Tov, Hashem Tzilcha. Hashem is your shadow. Everything you do, you know, like a shadow always moves along with you, and if he doesn't, you're Peter Pan, right? But shadows always go wherever you're going to go. Does somebody get that? You got that, Moshe. Good. I'm happy for you. There we go. I think you're the only one. Either way, but like everything else, Hashem Tzilcha just means Hashem is your shadow. Whatever you do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu follows along with it. If you act in one way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts in a certain way. That's the concept. The idea is that Hashem is your shadow in this way. If you act in a certain way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts in a different way. If you had so much anger, so to speak, that it led to Bilam coming and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to remove his anger in order for the curses not to come in and for it to be brachos, then the resulting act is going to be that there's going to be an issue of Arias. It's an unreal answer from Rav Wolfson over here. I truly feel that that's like, I can't believe how good it is. It's a really, really good shot. Panim Yafos also has a little bit of an idea over here. You can look it up yourself. So there's a tremendous hafla over here, as well as the rush. I feel that the Panim Yafos is explaining the rush. If you look in the back of the Mikros Gedolos and you see the rush, and then you look at the Panim Yafos hafla, I feel that they're both there. Now, the Ramban has a famous idea, and he says that this nevuah is for Yemosa Mashiach. At the end of the pasuk, he says, and what's going to happen at the end of days? That here is the secret of the times of Mashiach. The next few psukim, if we knew how to read them, and unfortunately we do not, but if we knew how to read them, we would understand how the world will unfold in the Yemosa Mashiach, in the days of Mashiach. Will it be that somehow America is put inside there and somehow they're hinted to in these psukim? It's very likely. It's very, very likely that America is hinted to over here. How Eretz Yisrael is going to have its own government, and yet it still won't be a religious government, but there will be something that leads up to something else. It's likely it's right here. The power of the Arabs is likely over here as well. These words are what's going to happen. Be'acharis hayamim. It's a future. It's a nevuah. It's like, take Yechezkel, take Yeshaya, take Yirmiah. Those are words of the Nevi'im. where the words from the Nevi'im are what HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed them in their visions, and they spoke about them. These are words from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself that Moshe Rabbeinu was told to write down. There is no question, everything we need to know is right here, we just don't know how to process it. We don't know how to take it in and say, like, here's how this works and here's how that works. We have absolutely no idea. Says the Ramban, the first bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gave, gave to Klal Yisrael, is all about how Bnei Yisrael is the chelek nachalasai. We are part and parcel of God's plan. We are part with Him, and we are in His inheritance. We are, so to speak, with Him Himself. That's the first nevuah. The second nevuah is how we're going to take over the land of Canaan. We're going to destroy the kings and all of its inhabitants. That's nevuah number two. Number three, Matovu Alecha Yaakov. We're going to multiply rapidly. We're going to be awesome. There's going to be awesomeness in Eretz Yisrael, and it's going to be really, really good. That kingdom of Matovu Alecha Yaakov will last. That's David Melech, obviously. Up until the final nevuah. That obviously is not going to be for 3,330 years from when this took place. I think it's actually a little bit less. It might be 3,290 years because the end of the 40 years in the desert. But either way, somewhere around then. And he said it's lo atah, lo karov. It's not close. It's going to take a long, long time. But this is the culmination of it all. What happens through Bnei Yisrael's timeline is that eventually will lead to what's going to be Ba'akrus HaYom, and whenever that's going to be, how Mashiach is going to come and what's going to be. And Bilam even brags about it and says, I'm Yodea Das Elyon. I know now the knowledge of what God knows. As if to say, I'm looking at the future and I see everything here. I see absolutely everything. I know how it's going to happen. An amazing, amazing idea. Rabbeinu Bachaya says, obviously, Bilam did not have a full yediyah. He didn't even know what his donkey was saying. He did not know Das Elyon. He knew something. He was able to take a glimpse of what Mashiach is going to be like and what the world was going to be like in Yemos Mashiach, and he was shocked. I just want you to think, if anybody from back then would come into our world now, just walk into the world and see what we have, they would be shocked out of their minds. Shocked, obviously, right? Just bathrooms would be way more than enough for them to be happy about everything for the rest of their lives. I am sure any king would trade all of his gold for one working toilet. I have no question about that whatsoever. Running water? Forget about cell phones and cars and planes and everything else that we have. They would kill for what we have. He would see he saw something in the Moshe Mashiach, and he saw crazy stuff. Absolute crazy stuff that he couldn't explain. Rabbeinu Ephraim says, according to this explanation of the Ramban, that it's all a result of everything, then Yatzcha does not mean, I will advise you. That's not what it means. Yatzcha means, I am going to place myself upon you. I'm going to let you in on a secret that I know. Yatzcha, even though Eitza normally is advice, right? Yatzcha is, I'm going to let you know something that nobody else knows. A secret that no one else knows about what's going to be in the future. And he gave it to Balak. And Balak heard it. And it could be the other nations also heard it. It could be there were people there that, unlike the Ramban says that it was private. Maybe he told it to other people and he said, this is what's going to be. Maybe this is the reason why there's a hatred for Klal Yisrael in many nations of the world. They don't even know why they hate us. Because the advice that was given over, not advice, but the words that were given over from Bilam to them were all about what's going to happen at the end of days and how bad it was going to be. We don't have that much time. What time do we have right now? Does anybody have it? What?
9:12.
9:12? All right, I only have 1 minute. I'm going to end with this Chassam Sofer, because Chassam Sofer is absolutely unbelievable. We know that... Wait, do I want to do that? I don't know if I want to do it. No, I don't want to do it. We're going to skip over the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Okay, if you remember that bird, does anybody remember the bird of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, Bala Ben Tzipor? He had a magic eight ball that he was able to see everything in, and that was through the bird's eyes. You don't remember? Okay, it's the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. If you look at the Orach Chaim HaKadosh in the very beginning of the Parashah, Vayar Balak Ben Tzipor, and then look at the Orach Chaim HaKadosh on this pasuk in the Parsha, you're going to see a combination between two ideas, and it's amazing, okay? But I'm not going to do it because we don't have enough time. I'm going to end with this. Every night, when I say Ashkivenu, I concentrate on four words. Sakenenu be'etza tova mofanecha. I was told years ago by one of my rebbeim that in order to give good advice, you should concentrate on these words. Sakenenu, you should fix us up. Be'etza tova, with good advice, mofanecha, in front of you, that it should be good advice that you give to other people. So that's that. When a person is kulo Torah, then you don't really have to worry about that because all of his advice is coming from the Torah itself. And although we don't fully understand it, there's a little bit of siyata d'shmaya that a person like that gets, so it works out well. Rav Eliashiv, I think we can all agree, was a person who was kulo Torah. There's nothing else going on by him. So there was a chassan and kala who had agreed that they were going to get married, but the chassan had a condition. He said, my mother is a widow, and she's an older woman, and I'd like to live right by her. I'm her only child. I'd like to buy her, so I want to get married, but I'd like the condition to be that we live down the block from my mother. Is that okay? So the kala, you know, agreed. The chassan seemed like a really nice guy, so everything was all good. They met once, so it seemed okay, right? And she signed on the bottom line, everything's all good. And she swore, she signed in an actual contract, that they would live by his mother. So they got married, things were good for a little bit, and then the mother-in-law started getting involved. She was complaining and arguing and whatever, and doing one thing after the other, and it was bad. It was really, really bad. And the kala didn't know what to do. She went to her husband for help, and the husband started siding with his mother. My mother's right. And it was really, really bad. So she came to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein and had a complaint. I want to move away. The chassan is a great guy, and everything else works out really, really well. It's this issue of the mother. We can't live by his mother. We need to get away from her. But she signed a contract. So Rabbi Zilberstein said, you shouldn't have signed the contract. You signed a contract. How are you supposed to get out of that? That doesn't make any sense. And he goes through. He went to Rav Eliashiv. And he asked Rav Eliashiv's father-in-law, he said, what am I supposed to do in this situation? Rav Eliashiv said, show me the contract. Rav Eliashiv looks at the contract, and the contract, I don't have the exact wording, and I don't want to do it badly because I'm going to do it in English instead of Hebrew. The basic idea behind the contract was that it said that I am going to live by my mother-in-law. Rav Eliashiv paskened, this is not living. What she's doing right now is she's killing herself, trying to live up to her mother-in-law's expectations. That's not called living. And I'm doing it within English, so I'm not going to go into the diuk that Rav Eliashiv made in the contract. But from that, he understood that even within the contract itself, which she signed, that I'm going to live by my mother-in-law, you can still see something there. There's still something involved over there. And the concept is that when one wants to give eitzah, when one wants to give advice, says Aleinu L'shabeach, if a person wants to give advice, a person has to allow himself to be kulo Torah and daven constantly that the eitzah that comes through his mouth is the eitzah that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to come through his mouth. Sometimes it makes sense, and sometimes it doesn't always make sense to us. Sometimes a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants the advice to be given in such a way that it doesn't work out the best for that guy. But you do something to make it as best as possible, the best situation, finding the correct eitzah for any given situation is a massive, massive bracha. All right, guys, we'll stop with that.